second hour at Aaron Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Our show brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey. Smoother than smooth here on this kind of rainy, overcast day here in Middle Tennessee. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. Coming up in the next hour at about 12:30, we'll talk to Clint Sterner, former quarterback, who does Sports Talk Radio down in Houston. The mess that we got into yesterday, that is the Texans. We'll find out how bad it is, and do they dare find a suitor and pull the trigger, and Deshaun Watson is out of the Titans division. I don't know. We'll get into all that and more with Clint coming up at 12:30. Right now we bring in former Georgia quarterback, former Chiefs quarterback, Aaron Murray. We've talked about him this week on the show, some comments that he made on this radio station at SEC Media Days 3 years ago. Now you can hear him on Sirius XM and CBS Sports. Aaron, good morning. How you doing?
Doing good. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing fantastic. Life after football. Let's start there. Let's get caught up. What are you doing on Sirius XM and CBS Sports?
So this is actually my fourth season with CBS, and just calling games on the weekend during the fall, which is an absolute blast. And then on Sirius, doing the SEC channel in the afternoons, 4 to 6, a little bit here and there with ESPNU. In the mornings, so staying busy with that kind of throughout the fall and now into spring, and being a little a dad. I got a 7-month-old, so it's been a blast. Just kind of now we got through football season and all the craziness that was, you know, are we going to do it? Are we not? Some of the traveling on the weekend, going to games, and now I can just kind of sit back and have some fun with him during the rest of winter and spring, and hopefully, knock on wood, man, a normal 2021 football season.
Yeah, no doubt. Is he pulling up on things yet? I know he's probably crawling by now. Is he getting close to pulling up, grabbing things and pulling himself up? Where is he in that stage?
He's getting there. He's just okay. He's a big boy. I mean, we had his 6-month visit, and he's like 95 to 99% off for everything. So he's just a big chunker. Lots of rolls on rolls on rolls on rolls on rolls. So I think it's just a lot of weight for him to get up, but dude, I'm just happy he's sleeping. That's the one thing. My wife and I were just obviously I like sleep, but I don't need a lot. My wife needs a ton of sleep. She loves to sleep in, and he's been since about 9-10 weeks sleeping 11-12. Last night he slept 13 hours.
Wow.
So, like, waking up this morning, like, it's like 7 o'clock. We usually get about 7, and we're just laying in bed. We look over, and then all of a sudden, 7:30. I'm like, "Do we need to go get him? Like, is he all right?" You go in there, he's just zonked out still. And he's been one hell of a sleeper, which has made our lives a lot better.
No doubt. Give that kid a treat. 13 hours.
Yeah.
Man, outstanding. Well, when he gets upright, lock everything down, because your world's going to get turned upside down once he gets upright. Just a heads up. We talked about some comments that you made on this station, Aaron. Just people you knew at Georgia, of course, people that you had talked to, and comments that when you were asked about Jeremy Pruitt being hired as the next head coach at Tennessee, obviously you had your doubts. You had some pretty strong words about his leadership abilities and what it takes to be a head coach, especially at this level. And then here sits, you know, the mess that Tennessee is in right now. When you look at the situation that's going on in Knoxville, and you look at what's happened on Jeremy Pruitt's watch, what do you think?
Well, first off, when he took the job, this was not an easy job. I mean, I had buddies that were on the previous coaching staff, and you know, we're kind of talking to them 3 years ago about just the roster, 4 years ago about the roster, and they're like, "Aaron, man, we are nowhere near talent and depth wise where we need to be to be competitive against Georgia and Florida and Alabama and the rest of just the SEC. We're nowhere close." So it was not an easy job. No matter who took over as head coach at Tennessee, it was not going to be a quick rebuild. I don't even think right now, whoever does get this job, it's not going to be a quick rebuild. I think the fans of Tennessee need to lower their expectations a little bit. This is not a team that is ready to be consistent with winning 9, 10, 11 games. And if you want to compare them to even Georgia, when Kirby took over for Mark Richt, that was a great roster he took over. I mean, that was a good program. It had been very good. It recruited really well. Obviously, Kirby took that to another level, but the coverage weren't there. Jeremy Pruitt was taking over a program that needed a lot of love, a lot of great recruiting, and 4 or 5 years of building that thing up, and I still think it's there. And I think that's kind of my issue, and I think it's a lot of fans' issues with Tennessee, is you know, Jeremy Pruitt was saying all year that, hey, the gap's closing, the gap's closing. And when you watch the film and you break it down, and, you know, I had the opportunity to actually be on the call for the game versus Florida, the gap was not closing at all. Not on offense, not on defense, not on special teams, nowhere on that roster. And based on watching the film, could you say that team was a better team this year than it was 3 years ago? And like I said, it wasn't, in my mind, 3 years ago, I wasn't saying this. Like I said, this team was not going to be contending for SEC East championships and competing in the SEC East champion, or excuse me, SEC championship game 3 years later. But you'd expect them to get better. Just get, make a little bit of progress on each side of the football. That wasn't happening. I don't necessarily think it was a talent thing. I mean, they got dudes at the offensive line. They had offense. They had backs. The receivers were good. They weren't elite, but they were good receivers. Obviously, the quarterback position was just a crap show, and that's something they need to focus on going forward, is they got to find a way to get a little bit better at that position. But I just think the stagnant of just this team is not moving in the right direction really hurt him in his 3 years there at Tennessee.
Yeah, I think what was perplexing to us that we said multiple times on the show is his exact – he said those the gap comments about Alabama. His comments after the Florida game is that he told the players – the only difference between them and Florida is the record. Basically, he's saying, hey, our rosters are the same, you know, with talent, and yet they, you know, they get run off the field. To me, was not very smart for a head coach to say, because you're basically saying, you know, you're not a very good coach if you think you have the same type of players as Florida and yet you're not competitive. Like, that's not an endorsement for you, Jeremy. This just in.
No, not at all. And like I said, I mean, you look at the offensive side of the football, yes. You know, maybe the quarterback position was a big problem for that team. You kind of look around the SEC and across college football. I mean, if you don't have a quarterback, you don't have a chance. I mean, these offenses, I wish I was born 10 years later so I could play in some of these offenses nowadays, because they are a pain in the butt for defenses to try to figure out and defend. And, you know, if you don't have a gunslinger back there, you're gonna struggle a little bit. But they, like I said, they had plenty of guys around them. I mean, you had a top three or four offensive line. You had tremendous running backs. Like I said, the receivers were not an issue, I don't think. So, yeah, it was. I don't think it was smart for him to say that stuff. The roster has gotten better, and like I said, that's the issue. The roster has gotten better. You've done a good job of recruiting. So, yes, there should be a better product on the field, and it just wasn't happening. So, you know, do I think he deserved another year? You know, if this whole recruiting issue and scandal didn't happen, I think he would have been given a fourth year. I don't know if they would have been much better. I think they would have benefited from the fact that the East next year is not going to be very good. Florida is going to be down. You know, I'm interested to see what Emory Jones looks like. I mean, is he ready to take that next step? He's been a guy that's been in the system for a while right now. He's someone that fits a little bit of what Dan Mullen wants to do. You know, the rest of the SEC East is kind of, besides Georgia, is blah. Missouri should be a little bit better. I do like the Connor Bazelak kid. I think he's pretty talented. Kentucky will be Kentucky, just kind of average. South Carolina is rebuilding. Georgia should kind of had a cakewalk, but like I said, Tennessee is now kind of jumbled in a bunch of very average football on that side of the division. So I think that would have helped him, and maybe, you know, helped them have a little bit better record in year four. But they just got to find the quarterback for the future, and that's going to be something that is going to be kind of a carousel, and hopefully they get a coaching staff here soon that they can start implementing the you know, if there's going to be a new scheme and get a spring ball, get a normal summer, get a normal fall, that position can be really solidified and not every single week they're having two. That was another thing offensively, man. Every single week is like two guys playing, three guys playing. It's like, just stick with the damn quarterback, man. You can't be moving these guys in and out like a running back. And, you know, a lot of it is Jeremy Pruitt making that decision. I mean, you can blame Chaney and, well, it's the offense. Well, if Pruitt said this is our guy and we're going to stick with him for the entire game, then Chaney's going to stick with that guy for the entire football game. I just did not like the kind of mind games that the quarterback position was dealing with throughout the season.
We're speaking with Aaron Murray, and we all know what the program looks like today and what people think about the program today. But I want to ask you, going back to your playing days at Georgia, I believe when you were there, I think your first season you redshirted. But when you were at Georgia, Aaron, I think this was basically the start of the slide for Tennessee. So all the, you know, all the years of, you know, a lot of winning and success. Was Philip Fulmer had just been fired. And I think when you got to Georgia is really what we've been witnessing kind of the last 12, 13 years of Tennessee football. But my question to you is, when you were at Georgia, you were going up against Tennessee back in those days. What did you think of Tennessee's program then?
You know, for me, it was, we always looked at Tennessee as a team that could score. I mean, they had Tyler Bray, they had all those receivers, and you're like, all right, I remember every single week we'd get, kind of get on Sunday, you'd get this big old thick packet with all the stats of the teams, offense, defense, individually, and it was kind of like, you know, us, Tennessee, Texas A&M as like the three top offenses within the SEC. I mean, and we were putting up, you know, mid-30s to high-30s, which now teams nowadays like, oh, that, we do that in the first half. But, you know, back in 2010 to 2012, 2013, those are some pretty good numbers. So, you know, a team that could score, you know, they never really scared us on the defensive side of the football. We kind of knew that we'd be able to have our way with them, but we'd have to score, especially, I believe it was 2011, 2012, when Bray was the quarterback. You know, we kind of, like I said, it was going to be a firework. So it was going to be a lot of fun going back and forth with that team. But like I said, I mean, it wasn't, to me at least, it wasn't like, you know, us going to Jacksonville to play Florida, who you knew was a solid team, great defense there, you know, could score points, not a ton of points, but it was just going to be more of an SEC-type ball game, you know, in the 20s, battle it out, run the football, who can win the time of possession, where Tennessee might have been, like I said, more of let's just shoot it. It is more of a shootout. Who could score the most points? Who can get to 41st was going to win. Obviously, it's really intimidating to go play at Neyland Stadium. I think probably to me the hardest place to play in the country. And that's another thing, too, when you talk about this program is, you know, they have everything. They got a great stadium. They got a great tradition. They got very passionate fans. That place gets just bonkers noisy. Makes it really difficult for the opposing quarterback. They got the facilities. I mean, they have everything that you need to be successful. You just need a coach. And right now, when you look at the program and look at kind of where we are, was it, you know, January 21st? I just think it's kind of laying the game right now to get a tier one coach. So I just, to me, I think that's going to be the big issue is who do you get right now? If you get someone who's going to be good enough to turn this program around, or are we going to be in the same situation 3 years from now? Because I just think, like I said, it's just so late in the game where most coaching staffs already have their plans set for the place they're at. You know, the kids are back at school. They're ready to get going. You kind of have set your goals for 2021. You know, what are we going to do, spring ball? Are we going to do mat drills? This is our plan for the year. So I just don't know who you're going to get. So it may be Kevin Still and give him a year to see what he can do, and if it's not great, then hopefully you get a normal kind of coaching carousel next year. But back to your original question, they were never anyone that we really feared. Like I said, we knew at times it was going to be a good ball game because of their offense, but it wasn't anything scary.
Talking to Aaron Murray, former Georgia quarterback, now with CBS Sports. And Aaron, one of the things that I took away from your comments, really before we saw everything unfold with Coach Pruitt, was it just seemed like he didn't have a lot of people. He had coached under some big-name people, but there weren't these glowing relationships that you could tell where he was getting a really good endorsement. There are some coaches that, you know, they get fired, or now there could be some tags of recruiting. I mean, there probably will be some sort of tag. I don't know the level of these violations that have him fired, quote, for cause. There's some people that have an unbelievable ability to come back from that. But I just wonder where Jeremy Pruitt now is going to be in the next 5 or 10 years.
I do, too. And it goes back to 4 years ago when I, you know, kind of had some issues with Jeremy Pruitt. And, you know, everything that I heard from within the program, still very involved with UGA, and have a bunch of buddies that are in the front office, on the coaching staff, and, you know, especially back then under Coach Rick, and everything I heard was he was just an absolute pain to work with, like the worst person to be to work with day in and day out. Had a temper, was very disrespectful to Coach Rick, and that just drove me nuts. I mean, Coach Rick is one of the nicest human beings you'll ever meet, probably one of the most respected individuals of all college coaches, especially when he was coaching. I mean, a guy that just did everything right. Recruiting, the way he treated his coaches, the way he treated the players, Everything was A quality. So to have a guy in there that was that disrespectful to Coach Rick was just like, are you kidding me right now? Like, so I just don't know if you're a head coach and if you know anyone on that Georgia staff and you know, yeah, you may be hiring an assistant who is disrespectful to authority. I just don't know who wants that. Like, you don't, you want a guy that's competitive. Obviously you want a guy that wins, but you also have to kind of know where you are in the pecking order. Like, you're not the boss man. And he had his chance to be the boss man at Tennessee. I don't know if he gets another head coaching job anywhere. Definitely I don't see him getting a head coaching job in any of the Power Five schools. Maybe he goes to a group of five and gets a chance to kind of really build his reputation as a head coach. But like I said, if I'm a head coach and I need an assistant, I'm a little bit worried about the stories I've heard about, like I said, him just being an absolute pain in the butt to work with back in the day.
Mm. Yeah, the relationships you build are important. That's something to note without question. You mentioned Mark Richt, you know, and here's a guy, and Aaron, I know you have a lot of respect for him. His name came up when we were just kicking around things. You're right, this next year is going to be a mess. But let's say in another year, the new AD tries to lay some foundation, and he goes to Mark Richt and say, we need somebody like you to come in and fix this thing. Do you think he would have any interest in a Tennessee if that was an opportunity laid in his lap and said, you're the guy, can you help us try to rebuild this thing?
No, I think Coach Rick is – I think he's done, man. He looked like he was ready to move on there at Miami. And I, you know, from every time I talk to him, he's enjoying working for the ACC Network. He's enjoying spending time with his wife and family. I think they have a place there in the Panhandle in Florida. They got a place here north of Atlanta to be around the grandkids. So I think he is – he's someone that's enjoying retirement. I don't think he needs to worry about money the rest of his life. I think he's doing that part. And he's obviously been a person who does a lot within the community, both here in the U.S. And overseas as well. So I think he's someone that wants to continue to give back and give back and give back. So, no, I don't see Coach Rick getting back into it. Like I said, I think he's enjoying his gig now. And, you know, it's, you know, Tennessee is a great destination. It's in the SEC. Like I said, it's a great tradition. It has a great fan base. It has, you know, everything you need to be successful. But you are in the SEC, and you got to play Alabama every year. You got to play Georgia. You got to play Florida. It's not easy, but it is somewhere where you can win and you can have success. They need to get the right guy, and I don't know if obviously Kevin Steele is that guy. He's someone that obviously Tennessee means a lot to him. But you just look at his record as a head coach and you kind of like,
yikes.
He's done it before, wasn't very successful. I just don't know if he's the guy. And like I said, it's just so late in the game right now within such a unique year and a unique time that I just don't know if you're going to be able to get a tier one coach. I mean, look at Auburn, for goodness sakes. Auburn wasn't able to get, you know, a top five, top six, seven coach out there. And I love Brian Harsin. I've covered Brian Harsin a lot, but I guarantee you, he was not on their short list, and I'm sure they went to all the same coaches that Tennessee's going to now. And if they said no to Auburn, I just don't know why they would say yes to Tennessee at the moment, especially with all the looming allegations and possibly some sanctions coming down the line.
Right, and you have this is something else that dawned on me. I know you did. I watched the broadcast, the Florida-Tennessee game, and it's just interesting to note how many key players for Tennessee are now transferring. As of yesterday, four more guys that were important players for sure. What are your thoughts, Aaron, on just the transfer rules in general? Are you, you know, progressive? Hey, the guys should be able to transfer after, you know, for one without sitting out, or are you a little bit more old school? Where do you fall on that spectrum?
You know, I would love it if, you know, if this is going to be the way of the future and you're kind of going to see all these transfers every single year, just give the kids 1 year. You get one time to transfer. You don't have to sit out the year. And then after that, I don't care what your situation is, you got to sit. If you want to transfer for a second time, unless you're a grad transfer, you need to, you got to sit out and give it a year and then go if you want to transfer to a third team. So, you know, I don't love it because of the fact that you love the stories you saw this year from two of the best quarterbacks in college football, Kyle Trask and Mac Jones, guys who sat, they learned, they developed, and look what they were able to accomplish. It's just guys nowadays and kids nowadays, they obviously want immediate satisfaction and gratification. They want to be the starter day one. They want to be all SEC. They want to have all the hype and praise. And because, you know, just with recruiting nowadays and social media, these kids are just pumped up to be superstars. And they just don't understand, man, that is a huge jump to go from being a high school kid to being playing, you know, just to playing in the SEC. That is not easy. Very few kids can go and be very successful year one to become starters year one. And it's the same thing that can be said from moving from college to the NFL. It is not an easy thing jumping from one thing to the next. And these kids just are unwilling to just sit, learn, develop, do the right things, and be able to just let time run its course and be the starter year two, year three. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, just between not wanting to sit and learn and kids wanting to just get out of college and go to the NFL and let me go make money, let me go get mine. It's like, dude, you're playing SEC football. You get free food, the best food. All your meals are paid for. You're living in great dorms. You're in a great college campus. The fans love you. Like, why are you in such a rush to move on? Like, you committed to that university for a reason. Enjoy it. Enjoy the process. Enjoy the grind. Enjoy the brotherhood of the class you committed with. Some of my best friends are the guys that, you know, I committed early. I got to build a lot of relationships with the guys that committed in my class. Some of my best friends to this day are the guys that I committed with. And I built that relationship over 3, 4, 5 years. And now those are my brothers for life. And these kids, I just want to continue to bounce around. You're just really not getting that experience. They're just trying to find the easy path. Where can I go for the least resistance to get to where I want to get? Instead of just enjoy, like I said, just enjoy it, man. You're a college football player in the SEC at great programs, and you're building some phenomenal relationships that you're going to have the rest of your life. So I just wish they'd sit back, enjoy it a little bit more instead of trying to always rush it and try to, you know, think the grass is greener on the other side.
We're talking to Aaron Murray, former Georgia quarterback, now with SiriusXM and CBS Sports. And I know we've hit a lot of Tennessee with you, but one of the most curious programs for me in the SEC right now is Auburn. They win under Gus Malzahn, but decided it wasn't good enough, so they move on. We always know how it can be there. And they bring in Brian Harsin, but what intrigues me the most is the staff that he's building around him. Former Vanderbilt coach Derek Mason is the defensive coordinator, and your former OC at Georgia, Mike Bobo. What are your early impressions of Auburn and the staff that Harsin is putting together?
Well, I think Harsin's a great coach. I had an opportunity to cover him numerous times in the Mountain West, and obviously he's won championships. He's a great offensive mind. So the only issue I was worried about with Coach Harsin was just recruiting and having those relationships here in the Southeast to, as we know, you need players. If you want to beat Alabama and be consistent going to the Atlanta and the SEC championship game, you need dudes. And so he needed to find a way to build a staff that can go out there and recruit and bring in guys from Florida and Georgia and Alabama and Louisiana and the Carolina. So I love what he did with his staff, to bring in Mason, to bring in Bobo. I thought we're tremendous hires by him. You got a great offensive coordinator. And Bobo, I'm sure that between both of them, because Harsin was the play caller at Boise State, I don't know if he's going to give that job over to Bobo. But they're going to mash and share ideas and really get that offense going. And then Derek Mason, obviously, has had a great, great run as a defensive coordinator back in the day. Obviously, had his struggles as a head coach, but Vanderbilt's not an easy place to win, but still is a tremendous defensive mind. So love the way he built his staff. And I think the biggest winner of the entire thing was Bo Nix. I mean, you got Harsin, who played the position, coached the position, knows offense really well. You got Mike Bobo, who has played the position, coached the position, can develop that position extremely well. I mean, look at the quarterbacks that he's been around in his career. So I think for Bo Nix heading into his third year, where, yes, you got to learn a new system. Hopefully he gets a spring ball to get on top of it. But you got two offensive minds that are really going to take his game to the next level. So I'm really interested to Bo, because I did think Bo got better this year, a little bit calmer in the pocket, a little bit more accurate. Obviously, at times he was a little bit erratic, but I think he took a step forward in year two. So I'm hoping year three with him with some really good coaches that he can really excel within that offense. I think Harsin did a great job. I'm excited to see what he can do. And obviously, like I said, happy for my boy Bobo that he landed in a good spot.
what you brought up Vanderbilt. So what are your impressions of Clark Lea as he comes in and takes over a program? As you said, it's hard to win there. It's a unique job, but he comes from a tradition of winning at Notre Dame as their DC to take over as the head coach.
Yeah, it's not an easy place, and it should be easy. Golly, man, if they would just put money into that program, it would be – you're in Nashville, for goodness sakes. You got great academics. I mean, for a parent, you're like, man, my kid gets to go to Nashville, a great city, a booming city. He's going to be in the top academic institution within the SEC. You got a lot of pluses. It's just they refuse to really upgrade when it comes to the facilities, when it comes to the stadium. And, I mean, it's tough. I mean, when you're a recruit and you go to Vanderbilt for a football weekend and you walk into an old, not great-looking stadium, and 70% of it is filled up with the opposing fans. Like, it's just hard to get excited to want to go there. So, you know, like I said, you have a lot of things that can lure players in there. I just wish they would spend some money. I mean, that's going to be the biggest thing. You know, with his relationships with being at Vanderbilt previous, can he find a way to convince them to put some money into facilities? I think they could, if they just had like a 35, 40,000 seat stadium, you know, like a really cool MLS soccer style stadium. Like, it doesn't need to be 90,000, 100,000, but just really up to date, MLS style to make it fun for fans there in Nashville, or just people in Nashville that want to go to the games and enjoy the experience. I think that would be awesome. So I think hopefully he's working his connections to make that happen. They do have a great quarterback in Ken Seals. I think the kid is an absolute stud. I mean, he was getting his butt whooped every single week, and just getting punished because of the lack of talent around him. But I think he's someone that you can at least build around, because I think the kid has talent. I think he can win you some ball games in the future. He just needs some, you know, a few pieces around him.
Aaron, really appreciate the visit. Thanks for your insights. Keep up the good work, and good luck with your son as he continues to get older. It's going to be a lot of fun. It'll be a fun journey on the home front.
I appreciate that. We're enjoying every day. Thank you, guys.
All right. That is Aaron Murray. You can find his work on Sirius XM and CBS Sports. We'll come back with more on the other side. Right now, I want to talk to you about the holiday season being over. Yeah, I know. We've moved on. We're in the third week of January, but the sports calendar is still in full swing, including this week. From collegiate to professional sports, there's no shortage of action. There's no better place to get in on all that action than with DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. If you haven't tried out DraftKings Sportsbook, what are you waiting for? To celebrate this year's football playoffs, DraftKings is giving all new players a chance to bet on any of this weekend's professional football games at 100-1 odds. What does that mean? It means you bet $1 on any game this weekend, and if your team wins, you cash $100. Wow, the football playoffs are in full swing and going this weekend. Four teams left. Don't forget, the basketball season is tipped off, and you have an opportunity to go to the app right now and take advantage of the daily odds boost. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Make it easy for you to deposit, withdraw your money at your convenience. All you have to do is download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app. Right now, use the promo code 1025GAME, and when you sign up, you'll get that 100-1 odds on any football game this weekend. That code again, 1025GAME, for new players to get a shot at $100 on any football action this weekend. Remember, that's for a limited time, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Restrictions do apply. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.
I do, too, and it goes back to 4 years ago when I, you know, kind of had some issues with Jeremy Pruitt, and, you know, everything that I heard from within the program, still very involved with UJ, and have a bunch of buddies that are in the front office, on the coaching staff, and, you know, especially back then under Coach Rick, and everything I heard was he was just an absolute pain to work with. Like, the worst person to be to work with day in and day out, had a temper, was very disrespectful to Coach Rick, and that just drives me nuts. I mean, Coach Rick is one of the nicest human beings you'll ever meet.
There you go, Aaron Murray making his appearance
nice
on
song
the show.
Choice.
Very nice.
Well done.
Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, our show is brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey. Smoother than smooth. Doesn't sound like JP was very smooth with his time in Knoxville.
But think about that, guys. That summer, right, at the SEC media days, we know how it works. There's usually people go out of their way not to make news during a time where there's no news. It's in the middle of summer, right? That was probably the biggest story that came out of SEC Media Day that year,
yep.
3 years ago.
Huge.
Yeah, and
it was huge.
And a lot of people were saying it was overblown, right? It was Jared that did the interview, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With Aaron Murray. And it just started to get legs, right? It was circulating. And we tried to put it in the proper perspective at the time, right? Hey, this doesn't mean everything, but it's noteworthy, right? But you had some people going, oh, you know, what does this mean? This is totally overblown. What is it? It's amazing how right on that was, that assessment. Mm-hmm. The relationships built. The you know, when push comes to shove, do you have people in your corner at the end of the day? And I think it's pretty clear that Jeremy Pruitt, when he looked around and it got tough, he had nobody standing up and saying, that's my guy. I'm protecting that guy. Right? It was kind of like, well, you get what you get.
Yeah. So I remember I was there too. I was, in fact, I think I'm the one that got Aaron on the show to do it all. But I remember sitting there during the interview and I looked at Jared when he asked the question and when Aaron answered it, and I'm like, here we go. This is the right, because I think it was the first day. I think it was the Monday. I can't remember, but in Atlanta, in the Omni, and you're right. And he turned out to be right with his comments, and appreciate him for coming on today. I think Aaron is very opinionated, and he's obviously well connected during his time in the SEC. And we've seen how it played out. Now the question is going to be, you can't fix the past. You can't fix what was there and how Jeremy Pruitt acted, or the things that he allegedly did wrong that's going to cost him violations or are violations. You can't fix that. How do you fix the future? How do you get this program back to where it needs to be? And also understand that you're not going to just go and be back to competing for national championships and SEC titles. It's literally a step-by-step. How do you do it?
And well, you're asking them to do something that they're not capable of doing, at least to this point. I mean, think about it. What do we always bag on dysfunctional franchises, right? Franchises that are bad, the Jets and the Browns and the Jags, and right? Let's see, in baseball, who's been dysfunctional? Anybody have a baseball team that's been dysfunctional? Anybody know?
Is it down south? What you're talking about?
Oh, well, I was trying to set Willie up to see if he'd go there. But anyway,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I just put it on tee. Nobody was willing to hit it. Okay, that's
there.
Fine.
There are a few. That's there fine. Are a few examples in baseball of dysfunction.
Look, there's examples in every sport. And why do they end up? I mean, Washington, the FTs. I mean, why? How do they always end up having the same narrative every time? Why? Because they can't get it right, right? They've got bad leadership. They've got bad ownership. They've got bad people running the place. People don't know what they're doing. People that are in over their head, they hire the wrong people constantly. How do you fix that? I mean, honestly, like what proof is there they can fix? Just think about it. Since they ran off Philip Fulmer and they couldn't wait to get rid of him, and that's fine, right? But just think about what has transpired since then. And look at the hires that they've made. So Lane Kiffin comes in, and we know how that all played out after a year. He bolts. Okay? Then you go into hiring Derek Dooley, Butch Jones, and Jeremy Pruitt. Now just think about that. Just say that out loud. The University of Tennessee, prominent school in the SEC, has a rich football tradition, history, has just come off a pretty good run where they have been extremely competitive. They've won a national championship year in and year out. They end up in Atlanta playing for SEC championships, and you have hired those people. How many ADs have they gone through? How many chancellors have they gone through? I mean, what do you expect to change right now? Can prove that they know what the heck they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. So how do you think it's going to change? I go back to what I said yesterday and listening to Aaron Murray say that again. Like, how can a guy like Aaron Murray know this, okay? And I get it. He had Georgia connections. He talked to me. But aren't you supposed to have – like, I'm just telling you right now, pick a market within reason. You know, I mean, if you tell me North Dakota, there's – yeah, pick a market within reason. I can pick up the phone and I can talk to somebody there that knows the lay of the land a whole lot better than me, and I can find out stuff from people. I feel pretty confident about that. Shouldn't you be able to do that in the position as an athletic director in the SEC? Shouldn't you have connections all over the place? Did you not just hear Sean Henry tell the story of a hire they're about to make and announce that's coming to the Predators? You think Sean Henry has connections all over the country? Do you think Sean Henry can pick up the phone and ask somebody about somebody or an organization or something he needs to know? He's not in that market, and have somebody really enlighten him on a situation or a person? My guess would be absolutely yes. Aren't you supposed to be able to do that? Yet it doesn't seem like anybody at Tennessee has the ability to do that. Like, how did they not know? Like, what did Aaron Murray, just think about it, for all the detractors, when he made the comments on this radio station that made national news, all the people say, oh, Aaron Murray, he's a Georgia guy, he's just trying to bring Tennessee down, and all the stuff they would say of why he, but think about what you're saying. What does Aaron Murray have? He's done at that point. He's done playing. He's in the media. Like, what does he have? What's in it for him to come on a radio
station and bash Tennessee?
Yeah. If it's not true, right? If Jeremy Pruitt ends up being this great guy, tremendous coach, everybody knows it but him, like, he would get torched. It would be awful for him. So what would be in it for him to just stick his neck out there and just make up the, you know, all this stuff about Jeremy Pruitt?
Well, nothing.
The answer is nothing.
But here's something that we should not leave out is, why would they be giving Jeremy Pruitt the benefit of the doubt at the time and be willing to either not vet fully or just look the other way when you hear something like that? If they did have any whispers of that type of thing, why would that be? They were desperate. They had gone through seven guys or however many it was.
No doubt. But,
and
Willie,
so
how does
they were
Philip
so
Fulmer,
late in the game.
But you still can't make the bad hire, even if you're desperate. Like, but can't you, Philip Fulmer pick – he doesn't have connections
but you're down
to pick up and talk to somebody like Aaron Murray did and say, hey, give me a scoop. Like, well, tell me a little bit about Pruitt. Like, what do you know
I
about
get
him?
I totally agree, know. but here's – right, right. That is the thing. I don't know that he didn't know, but
well,
what other
true.
Choice did he have? When you get into the game so late – and as Aaron Murray just said, that's where they are today. Everybody's got their plans. They're getting ready for spring football. You're going to have to pry somebody away that's already set, unless you're picking from a very reduced pool, right, of people that are out there sitting around not doing anything. And that has been a theme of what has happened in their hiring practice. Now, Lane Kiffin kind of left them high and dry and forced them into that situation.
Yes.
And that didn't help. And
I don't blame them
for
that.
They end up with Derek Dooley, who was not a prime candidate to jump in and do well. Now, Butch Jones was somewhere in the middle. He wasn't their first choice, but he was at least the guy where you said, okay, the guy had done enough at Cincinnati.
Has a track record.
He has a track record. He could move up. Oh, I feel like it was Whittingham was in there. There was a couple other guys. The guy at Utah,
yeah.
Whittingham, I think.
Yeah. It's been so long, and so
many. I feel like there were two
who
or three others.
Okay.
Of course, Gruden, of course, always was in there somewhere.
Well, isn't Gundy always in there every time too? It seems like
we'll have to go back and look for more specifics.
That's just his
raise. But if I recall correctly, it took a while before they were able to find and identify and hire Butch Jones. It wasn't like this is the guy we called, and this is our next guy. Right, he wasn't a household name or anything, but he was a solid choice. He had credentials. But then, you know, when he was gone, you had the whole debacle where the whole process got pushed back so far. They were down to who can we hire? Right? It's not who do we want? Who are we choosing? It's kind of like who's left? Who can we find? That's what struck me about the Pruitt thing.
Well, yeah. We know Jeff Brom. We know. I mean, we know the whole thing.
Shiano, we remember that one.
Well, the Shiano thing
was done. That's why we've been trying to ask because
people would have you want to
forget that part that Shiano was gone. They don't like talking about it, but it's now it's really part. Like, what would have happened?
Wait a minute. There were two that were done. Shiano and Leach. They were done. They'd found their guy.
Right.
Remember. John Curry was like, don't get on that plane. You're not going out there.
Yeah.
He was basically that was the end of him, right? I'm going out there to hire Mike Leach, and they're like, yeah, no, we need you to stay here. You're not. That was it for him. He had to have known right then, I'm done. I'm done as the AD. I just told you I'm the athletics director. I'm going to go hire Mike Leach. It's done. And you just told me to stay home. Well, I guess I'm no longer going to be the AD. Two guys.
So you fast forward to today. And that's maybe an argument to sit for a year. Now, I don't know if that's a good choice either, but what's better? To try to hire from the reduced pool now for the new athletic director, which we don't know how long that's going to take, or just let it go with Kevin Steele for a year and go through this process timely next year?
I think, and it's the multi-million dollar question, but I think that at this point, because there are, I mean, we know the names that are available, and if you can talk them into it, there are some good ones, but you're probably not going to be able to talk them into it. So I think you put all your focus with your search firm and everybody in between on finding the right AD and have the mindset of this
Bingo.
Athletic director Bingo. Is going to come in, and they're going to be our athletic director for until the end of time. Think
Bingo.
Of it that way. You get that right, because that's the first step. You get that right, then you can assume that you're going to get the rest of the steps right, because you got the leader. And then that athletic director walks in and looks at the chancellor, looks at the president, looks at whoever, Peyton
Manning.
It looks
like they have the athletic director.
And says, hey, got this. Get out of my way.
Well, let me see if this guy fits your profile, because Dan Wolkin has just put out there, Tennessee is hiring Danny White from UCF. Deal is done.
Yep. USA Today.
Wow.
How interesting is it that
right
Dan Wolkin
get the speech. There you
is
go.
The guy that puts it out there. At least that's who I saw it first from.
No, he just now tweeted it. Yeah. I saw it too. Central for Danny White.
Now, that's intriguing. Danny White he's done some really good things as an AD.
I'm going to tell you why I agree with what you were saying, Jason. I literally was going there, and we'll do that on the other side, because it does look like I said. I just said a little bit ago, they got turned down, but they are moving quickly. They are going to try to find their next AD, and it looks like they've done it. But I'll tell you why it's important on the other side to have the AD and the correct AD in place to try to get this thing going in the right direction. We'll do that to close out hour number two of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Well, that was quick. University of Tennessee has found their next AD, and it is Danny White coming over from Central Florida. Now, this is not the former quarterback, Danny White. Just for anybody who
heard
that.
I was getting excited for a second.
And was like, right, I know Chase and his Cowboy roots were like, oh,
I knew.
They hired Danny White. What?
I knew.
But he didn't do that. This is not the former quarterback, Danny White, who we've had on the show many, many times over the years. This is somebody who's got a pretty good resume. When you look at what he's done, I think he's around 40 years old. But before we get into all that,
41.
I do want to say,
how old is he?
41.
Interesting.
When you
so
were
we need that, to we need to make this clarification. This is not Danny White, the former Cowboys quarterback punter.
Is this mic on? Are we on?
Yeah. Okay. I just want to double check that, because I honestly, when I saw that, that's who popped
into
my
mind.
Is my
mic on? Am I Elijah? Am I on?
Oh, yeah, you're brother, on. This guy stinks.
Okay.
Is there an echo in the room?
I read you. So I missed. It went over my head.
I'm a stickler for detail.
And
you literally
over your head,
waited for me
your,
to stop saying
your
it,
head.
And then you said that. I mean,
okay. Forgive me. I went into the fog for a minute there.
Autopilot for just a little bit.
Will Donick.
Okay.
Will Donick. Will
I
Donick.
I can just hear Aaron. Will.
Will.
Will. Focus. Will. Focus. This is critically – now, I don't know – I mean, I've been trying to read up on him pretty quickly. His time at Buffalo and just kind of what he's done. He was a basketball player, I guess, for a short amount of time at Notre Dame. So he went to Pete Weber's alma mater. So
he hired the guy that – I don't at the risk of repeating, he did hire the guy that Vanderbilt was looking at, like the coach for Buffalo that's done a really good job. What's his name?
Lance Leopold?
Leopold, yeah. Leopold. Apparently, Vanderbilt was very impressed with Leopold in the interview process, and I think he looks like he's on his way to being very successful. He's already done some great things at Buffalo, but maybe getting another job somewhere, and that was Danny White that hired him. So is Leopold maybe on the radar here for Tennessee?
He would have hired Scott Frost, right?
How long has he been at UCF?
Since 2015.
Yeah.
I'm looking at Athletic.
And Josh Heupel. So.
The Athletic, David Ubben.
Or was Frost already there?
Frost got there in 16.
Okay.
After George O'Leary.
So he was the AD on the best years ever in UCF football history.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read you a little something from David Ubben from The Athletic. He wrote, he had 13 names, so this is what you do, right? You throw out all the names and see if you're right on one of them. And so congrats to David Ubben. He had Danny White on there. And he says, did hire Scott Frost. When Frost left for Nebraska, he hired Josh Heupel. And before he left for UCF, he hired Lance Leopold at Buffalo. So that's got to be music to your ears if you're a Tennessee fan going, okay, this guy has had three for three.
And I'm seeing solid on Twitter hires. People in the know that are going, this is a fantastic hire.
Yeah.
So home run, grand slam, however you want to put it.
So do you think Leopold is somebody that he says, okay, he was a finalist for the Vanderbilt job unofficially. So maybe he's ready for the SEC? Is that the guy you might look at? Or do you still look at the guy from Coastal Carolina, Jimmy Chadwell?
He knows better than us. So, it looks like – and hopefully we'll get him on the show and learn a little bit more about him here in the coming – in the future here soon. But it sounds like he's got an eye for talent. It sounds like he's got a pretty good track record at an early age in this business of hiring the right people.
Yeah.
So that is – a really, really good sign, considering what we were talking about earlier, right? Because that's what they have.
Yeah, under the circumstances, in the situation, this looks very good. Here's one other little note: Alabama doing a pretty good job on the college basketball floor right now.
Nate Oates,
he hired Nate Oates at Buffalo.
Wow. Okay.
So there's four for four.
You have my attention.
Yeah.
Those are really good hires.
Because obviously his number one job is going to be to fix football, but you don't want him to screw up the other sports that are working.
That's quite a resume.
They are important.
That really is. And like I said, early 40s?
41.
Not bad.
That's amazing.
Not bad. You have my attention.
Okay, so now I gave the passionate speech right as this was happening. So now the next step is you have the AD and – on paper, and what you see the track record, appears they got it right. Now he walks in and goes, okay, Chancellor, President, Boosters, y'all go to lunch. Let me go to work. I got this.
Yeah, he definitely needs to. Remember when I used to say all the time that the Titans would send Ken Whisenhunt out to get pizza and then they would have the real meetings
right.
for the game plan? He needs to do
the other
that.
Way around.
He needs to send them out to go get pizza, and then he should have, gather the staff in there and figure out the direction.
This is the moment where, and it's okay to do this. I think if you do it right, it's okay to do this. You've hired me to do the job. Let me do the job.
Now get out of the way.
Get out of my way. I got this. I don't need your input. If I do, I'll ask. And people that do that, whether it's a coach or an AD, people that have the to do that are typically successful. So that's what needs to happen. Like, you want a coach? I'll go get you a coach. I got it.
Chancellor Plowman, President Boyd, I just ordered pizza 30 minutes down the road. I need you to go get it. And don't take your time coming back. And then call for some meetings in the offices. Send them away. They don't need to be. Yeah, let him do his job. I mean, that's what you hired him for. Let him do his job. That's a pretty good track record. I've got to be honest. Yeah. That's impressive. Nate Oates, Lance Leopold, Scott Frost, and Josh Heupel. And he's 41 years old. Not bad. Not bad at all.
Doug in Franklin says Danny White's dad is Kevin White, Duke's AD. Is that right?
Is that possible?
Would you make him brothers with Florida head coach Mark White?
I don't know. I've been trying to read up on it.
We're absorbing this as we go.
During the break.
We're learning as we go.
His father's Kevin, yeah. The AD at Duke, yes.
Yep. So there's a...
Isn't that Florida coach, Florida basketball coach connection too?
Yes. Okay. It's brother. That's his brother. There's an echo in the room again.
Will Donick.
Oh, brother, this guy stinks!
I'm reading things. I'm trying to score. I'm trying to help the show, and I'm just late. I'm a beat late today.
Let's go to Kansas City next.
Are we going to Kansas City next?